Hi, Chris. Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning. Where do you live?
I'm in Memphis, Tennessee.
Ah, Memphis, Tennessee. Yeah. When were you first diagnosed? Christopher Wark, he's got quite a story with this thing called colon cancer. His website is chrisbeatcancer.com. Great story. Good for you. Congratulations. When were you first diagnosed with colon cancer?
I was diagnosed in December 2003.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Was there a lot of other cancers, colon cancers? And did you have that genetic kind of predisposition possibly at all? Grandma, grandpa, uncles, aunts?
I had not had any family members diagnosed with colon cancer when I was diagnosed.
Uh-huh.
And I'd actually never had any family members diagnosed at all with cancer, any type.
Wow. What did you first? Yeah. What did you first start to feel, Chris? How did you get to the point where you even got diagnosed? Talk a little bit about that original story.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I was 26 years old and I was having abdominal pain, yeah. And I thought it was an ulcer, and I was misdiagnosed with an ulcer. But the pain gradually got worse and worse, and we realized, well, okay, it's this ulcer medication isn't helping, and so I went and had a colonoscopy done, mm-hmm. which is pretty unusual for a 26-year-old.
Yeah.
And they found a golf ball-sized tumor in my large intestine. And when I woke up from anesthesia, they said, listen, you've got this tumor. And we did a biopsy. We're going to send it to the lab. And hopefully it's not cancer. And a day or so later, they called and told me it was cancer. So at that point, you know, that's really when my life changed completely. I went from a sort of a hardworking 26-year-old real estate entrepreneur, musician, you know, newlywed.
Yeah.
Life was going great.
Yeah.
To the cancer patient.
Well, they call some of these cancers malignant. I don't know. It does make up names, but was it theoretically a malignant?
Yeah, it was definitely malignant. You know, it had spread to my lymph nodes. So what happened was they rushed me into surgery, and, you know, this is what happens to almost every cancer patient. You don't have time to think. You don't have time to analyze the situation, right? To think about, like, why do I have cancer? What's going on in my life? Why am I sick?
Yeah.
Once you get a diagnosis, they just rush you into treatment. So they said, look, we got to get you into surgery and get this out of you right away before it spreads and kills you.
They said that there on the table while you're laying on the table?
No, I was in a phone call, and you know, as soon as they told me I had cancer.
Oh, you did go home. I see.
Right. So, you know, they use fear to manipulate patients to take immediate action. And so I was like, okay, yeah, I guess I got to have surgery. And this was 2 days before Christmas. So I postponed the surgery about a week because I didn't want to be in the hospital on Christmas. And went in on December 30th. They took out a third of my large intestine. Took out the tumor, and that's when they realized it was worse than they thought, and it had spread to my lymph nodes. So I was technically stage 3C, which is one click above stage 4. So it was on its way to my liver, which is typically where colon cancer metastasizes to. So I woke up from surgery, found out it was worse than they thought, and they told me I needed 9 to 12 months of chemotherapy.
Chemo.
And yeah. Because surgery doesn't cure stage 3 colon cancer. It's pretty rare. So they knew that I still had circulating tumor cells, circulating cancer stem cells in my body. And they were hoping that, you know, chemotherapy would maybe kill them and prevent a recurrence. But the problem is in young adult cancer, young adult colon cancer is very aggressive. It's different than colon cancer in the elderly. So at that point, I just thought, okay, I'm a typical cancer patient now, and I guess I'm going to do chemo. And, you know, I was just kind of imagining what my life was going to be like and what kind of person I was going to turn into.
Yeah,
because I had seen cancer patients in the world. Yeah, I'd seen what they look like, and it was, you know, for lack of a better word, it's pretty disturbing and frightening if you've ever seen an advanced stage cancer patient who's lost all their hair, who's emaciated, whose skin is this sort of yellowish gray, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they just look like they're dying, And it's not the disease that's made them look like that. It's the treatment.
The chemo.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the prospect of me becoming that was pretty scary. There are a couple things that happened in the hospital that really started the wheels turning for me. The first thing that happened was the very first meal that they served me after taking out a third of my large intestine was a sloppy Joe.
A sloppy Joe?
Yeah. Yeah. Sloppy Joe, which is such a terrible food item. They don't even serve it in restaurants. Nobody likes sloppy Joes. Restaurants don't serve them because nobody likes them. The only place you can get one is summer camp, the military, or maybe prison. And apparently also in hospitals. So they put this sloppy Joe in front of me and I'm like, I can't believe, this is gross. Why are they serving this to sick people, to cancer patients in the hospital? This is the worst cafeteria food I can think of. And so that was sort of a red flag. Like there's some disconnect, right? Something's wrong with the healthcare industry if they're serving this kind of food to sick people.
Let me interrupt 1 second, then we'll continue, Sloppy Joe. At this point, what kind of awareness would you say you had, if 10 was, you've been studying it for 50 years and you really know a lot about natural methods, and that was a 10, on a 1 to 10, what kind of awareness did you have of natural approaches to things and diet connections with disease, would you say? What number?
Yeah, I don't know how to scale it on 1 to 10, but I had more awareness than the average person.
Oh, you did?
Let's just put it that way.
Oh, okay.
Just more than the average person.
Okay.
I worked at Whole Foods, Wild Oats, before they got bought out by Whole Foods. So I knew what organic food was. I knew what health food was. I wasn't eating that way, but I knew that world existed.
You weren't eating that way, but I see. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So then after Sloppy Joe, is there another kind of, what else happened that made you really start to look at what was going on in your life?
Well, the second thing that happened in the hospital was the surgeon came to see me on the day I was leaving, and we were having a discussion about what was next. And I asked him, are there any foods I need to eat or avoid? Right? Because I wanted to help myself heal, and I didn't want to eat the wrong thing that would interfere, because he had just taken out a third of my large intestine and sewn me back together. So I didn't want to, didn't want to screw it up. And he said, no, just don't lift anything heavier than a beer.
Okay. All right.
So I thought, okay, well, this guy, the surgeon who I thought maybe would have some kind of nutritional expertise on the gut, right? Since he's a gut surgeon, he might have some ideas on food that's good for the gut. Didn't have any for me. So again, another little red flag, like there's something wrong with this system, because I knew there was healthy food. I knew the difference between health food and junk food. And I think most people do, right? Most people know when they see a plate of vegetables that it's healthier than a sloppy Joe and some Jell-O.
Yeah.
So I go home from surgery. I was recovering and praying a lot, thinking about my future and what it was, how long I had to live and how many birthdays I would see and whether or not I'd ever be able to have children. And, you know, just thinking all these thoughts that a young person has when they are diagnosed with a terminal disease. And the idea of chemotherapy just became increasingly more problematic to me. I just was developing this internal resistance to the idea. I just didn't want to do it. You know, I mean, my instincts, my intuition would just tell me, like, don't do it.
Yeah.
Like, this is not for you. But I didn't know what else to do. And so I prayed about it and I was just like, God, you know, if there's another way besides chemotherapy, please show me.
Oh, good for you.
Because I was in a place of desperation and I needed an answer, right? I needed help.
Yeah.
So I just reached out. And I'm a Christian, so it wasn't like I'd never prayed before.
Yeah.
But my wife and I just were praying about it on the couch. I mean, I just remember it vividly. And 2 days later, I got a book that was sent to me from a man who lived in Alaska that knew my dad. And this guy sent me a book It was written by another guy who had healed his colon cancer naturally without surgery or chemotherapy or any treatments. And I started reading this book and I was like, man, this is amazing. Like, I can't believe this book came to me. This is an answer to prayer.
You bet.
And that book turned me on to the world of nutrition to prevent and reverse disease, especially raw foods. And so I started reading this thing and I immediately was like, this is what I got to do. I've got to adopt a raw food diet. I've got to get back to nature and start eating just massive amounts of fruits and vegetables. And I just instantly knew this was a good idea. Right? I instantly knew this is what I needed to do. And so I bought a juicer. I went to the grocery store. I loaded up as much organic vegetables as I could.
Yeah.
And I just immediately, like overnight, completely changed my diet from the standard American diet, eating meat and dairy three times a day, processed food, junk food, fast food, eating whatever I wanted. I was never overweight, never worried about my weight or my health before.
Well, you were just a kid. You were 26. You could eat anything.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Yeah, I definitely was a kid. I felt like a kid. And
Do you recall the name of the book, Chris?
Yeah, that book was called God's Way to Ultimate Health, but I don't recommend it anymore because okay. I've learned a whole lot since then. And there's some information in the book that I know now is not correct. But point is, that book got me started.
Yeah.
My new book, Chris Beat Cancer, which is 14 years of research. So I've taken what I've learned from every cancer survivor I've ever met who's healed naturally, from all the experts, all the doctors, like 14 years of research, and written a book that is, there's nothing like it on earth.
Chris, cool, man. So, good for you. Chris Beat Cancer is the name of the book. Chris Beat Cancer.
Yeah. My new book's called Chris Beat Cancer, and it details exactly what I did to heal. Obviously tells my story in great detail, but then also I've collected all of the evidence-based nutritional science research that supports how food helps your body heal cancer and prevent cancer, and the right foods to eat, and why. Back in 2004, I had a handful of books, and they were making all kinds of claims, but they didn't have any science.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the raw food diet's amazing; it's a powerful diet. But again, there was very little science and very little research at that time, and so most of the folks that were talking about healing cancer with nutrition, raw foods, and juicing, we're talking from experience, but they weren't bringing the science into it. And so that's what I've done in my book, is my experience plus the science. And the goal is also to help people avoid the perils and pitfalls of conventional treatment, because you don't have to say no to conventional treatment. It's a personal choice every person has to make, every patient has to make. But there's a lot you need to know so that you can make an informed decision. Right? Making a decision that's best for you. And the problem is most cancer patients are completely clueless.
Right.
They have no idea what they're signing up for. Yeah. They have no idea what the risks are, what the side effects are, what permanent damage treatments are going to cause. And they all believe or hope that they're going to be in the small percentage of people that are actually cured by treatment. Everyone believes or hopes they're going to be in that small percentage. And guess what? That's false hope, because most people aren't, right? What are you doing differently than everybody else that's going to put you in that small percentage of survivors thanks to conventional treatment? Well, problem is most people are doing this. They're all doing the same things, and they're all getting the same result, which is temporary remission, temporary tumor shrinkage. But the cancer comes back more aggressive than before. Then they're subjected to even more aggressive treatments, and they just suffer, right? They suffer unimaginable amounts of brutal side effects from treatment.
Chris Wark is with us. Excuse me a second. We're on OneRadioNetwork.com. His website is ChrisBeatCancer.com, and Chris Beat Cancer also the name of his book. He has a blog, and on the evidence-based stuff, I've often wondered. I mean, we've heard of people, Chris, of course, over the years that have ditched cancer. They go down and do the Gerson thing, you know, juicing and whatever, the Hippocrates Institute, right, in Florida.
Yeah.
They do the same thing and have great, I mean, really great track record. But, I mean, were you looking for something with really peer-reviewed science that said if you eat this, you eat this, you eat this, the cancer will get balanced out in your body? I'm just trying to understand what you mean by science.
Well, I wasn't looking for that then. All I was doing was trying to survive.
Right, right. But right. I mean, now so with that putting point the book in my together, life, putting the book together.
Yeah,
yeah.
But in creating the book, so anybody can write a book, and anybody can make up a bunch of stuff that isn't true and put it in a book
all the time,
right? And can and convince a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so it became increasingly important to me as I was working on this book, which I spent years working on, that I present evidence-based answers, right? And that I connect the dots between the natural health community and the science community. That's really important because what most people don't know is that the science community, the research community, has produced thousands and thousands and thousands of nutritional science studies that demonstrate the anti-cancer compounds in fruits and vegetables, of which there are thousands. So there's this mound of evidence that isn't being talked about. All this published study, it's all on PubMed, right? This is published peer-reviewed research that's out there. And all we have to do is just connect the dots and show people that it isn't quackery that fruits and vegetables help your body prevent and heal cancer. And there's a lot of different ways they do it, but it's all it basically just boils down to unique individual compounds. So in green tea is an amazing anti-cancer beverage that contains a compound called EGCG, which is a catechin that is an anti-cancer compound. So drinking green tea every day is so amazing for you. It's so good for you and so simple, something that anyone can do, right? Beyond that, the cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, kale, cabbage, onions, garlic, and leeks, which is the allium family as well, are all some of the most potent anti-cancer foods because of the unique compounds they contain. And these are foods that Americans don't eat very much of.
Right. Yeah.
Americans eat a lot of potatoes, which are okay, but they're not the most potent anti-cancer food, that's for sure. And we eat a lot of fried potatoes, potato chips, right? So it's really junk food.
Right.
We eat very little cruciferous vegetables and very little onions and garlic. We eat very little green vegetables. Americans eat very little fruit. We probably eat more bananas than anything else. And berries like blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, and strawberries are the most potent anti-cancer fruits. So again, it's not some stuff I made up. This is what the science says.
Chris, so, let me interrupt here a sec. Chris Wark is with us. So let me go back. Would you say before, when you started having the pains, and go back in, 2006, sorry?
2003.
Would you say you were a worrier? Were you anxious and all kind of high? Type 1?
No.
No, not at all?
No, I was not a worrier. No, I was not a worrier, but I was under a lot of stress.
Of work, family, stuff like that?
Work.
Work. A lot of stress.
Lots of work stress.
Okay.
Lots of emotional stress, but not. I was never a worrier.
But
I had a lot of negativity, a lot of bitterness in my life,
okay.
A lot of some unforgiveness issues.
Yeah.
I was carrying some emotional baggage for sure.
Right.
And as an entrepreneur and a very driven person, I was sort of piling stress onto myself to prove myself, to achieve things, to show the world, right? I kind of had a chip on my shoulder. And so all those things were really unhealthy, disease-promoting, emotional habits.
Good for you. So
I had to address that as well. It's not just about the diet.
Of course.
Health is a spiritual, mental, emotional, physical condition. It's all of those things. And I had to change my diet. I had to change the way I thought. I had to change, get right with God and address, you know, my spiritual life. All of those things had to be addressed. So I turned my life upside down.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. During that time, too, just on the physiological level, it's just kind of interesting to me. Would you say that the whole colon thing, was it moving kind of regularly? Were you constipated a lot prior to this diagnosis? Just kind of curious.
No, I didn't really suffer from constipation, and I felt like I pooped regularly every day. But knowing what I know now, I probably was constipated compared to the way I poop now. For anybody listening, if you're not pooping twice a day, you're constipated.
Yeah, I agree.
Period.
I agree.
Period. You've got to be pooping twice a day. Hmm. And the good thing is, it's easy to unconstipate yourself if you change your diet. So a plant-based diet that's rich in fruits and vegetables, it's rich in natural fiber and starch from plant food, moves through your body very quickly and smoothly and easily. And a diet that's really heavy in meat and dairy, processed food, and oils clogs you up. It moves through your digestive system very slowly and promotes constipation. And disease begins in the gut.
Yeah.
And so a constipated person, even if they're pooping daily, they may be pooping something they ate many days ago, right? So they may be constipated even though they think they're regular. They may actually be constipated. So the reason we know this is from studies done on the healthiest colons in the world, which are the rural Africans. And the rural Africans, their average bowel transit time is 30 hours.
30 hours.
Yeah, 30 hours. So from the time they eat a meal to the time it comes out the back, right, from the front to the back, mouth to anus, is about 30 hours. And so, and it's easy to track. So anyway, that's how fast food should be moving through your body. And if it doesn't move through that fast, what happens is it sits in your colon and it putrefies and creates what are called fecal mutagens. And these are toxic byproducts of your poop as it putrefies. And fecal mutagens are cancerous, are cancer-causing compounds that are created in your gut that not only irritate and inflame the lining of your colon, but are absorbed through your colon back into your bloodstream and circulate throughout your whole body.
Yeah. I would argue so too, Chris, if you're talking about your lifestyle and all the stress and all of that stuff, I think it's pretty well, I would conjecture that kind of emotional, spiritual state that you were in would slow that transit time down a lot.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Yeah absolutely. Yeah. Being stressed
slows it down, right? But let's go back to this anti-cancer idea, because I'm kind of really curious about this, Chris Ward. So we say these foods like green tea, anti-cancer, and we get that, and I understand that. But cancer is not really, if you're killing cancer cells, you're still not getting to the root cause.
Yeah, so my goal is to make your body a place where cancer cannot thrive.
There you go, right.
So you have to change the internal terrain. And there are many components to the internal terrain of your body, right? Physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, right? If we're just talking about physical, we're talking about what you put in your mouth, right? Is the food that you're eating promoting health or disease?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very, very strict dividing line with a little gray area, but it's pretty much black and white. And the black and white of it is, if it comes from the earth, organically grown, preferably, it's good. Assuming it's not a poisonous mushroom, right? Fruits and vegetables, legumes, whole grains, these are foods that nourish your body and support your body's ability to repair, regenerate, detoxify, and heal, and support your immune system, most importantly, because your immune system is what keeps you cancer-free. That's the difference between a cancer patient or person with tumors and a person with no tumors. The key difference is how well their immune system is functioning.
Because we make cancer cells all the time, right?
What's that?
The body makes cancer cells all the time.
All the time, yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
Every day, in every person, cells are mutating and becoming precancerous, right? So, but the good news is your immune system is designed to identify and eliminate precancerous and even cancerous cells before they grow into a lesion or a lump or bump or tumor, right? that's big enough to cause problems.
Yeah.
So your body, when it's working properly, is identifying and eliminating cancer. And the way you help it do that is, number one, through eating tons of fruits and vegetables that give unique molecular compounds to your body that support your immune system. Number two is exercise. Exercise is also an immune booster and increases detoxification and circulation. Those are the two big physical components, right? Diet and exercise. It sounds overly simplistic, but the truth is actually very simple. The mental, physical, and emotional side of it is when you're harboring negativity, mm-hmm. envy, jealousy, bitterness, and unforgiveness, those are toxic emotions that produce a physiological response in your body that is harmful. Yeah. And what they do is they raise your stress hormones. And guess what? When your stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol are elevated, then they suppress your immune function. They also suppress digestive function, which is something you referenced earlier, right? Yeah. About emotional state affecting your digestive health.
Mm-hmm.
It does. And that's how.
Yeah, it does.
So all of these little, there are all of these little clues, right? And when you connect the dots, you see the whole picture.
I wonder.
Is that you can't just start drinking green tea.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
No,
green tea is amazing, yeah. And everyone should drink it every day.
With what you know over all this research, I wonder why people seem to do so well when they're diagnosed, Chris Wark, with cancer, and they just start juicing. We've talked to so many people over the years. They just started juicing. They really didn't even know what they were doing, right? They just started juicing from carrots to greens. Do you think that just affords the body a chance to get back into balance when you do that?
Well, there's several reasons, I think. One is juicing supplies your body with concentrated nutrition from fruits and vegetables.
Just like vitamins and minerals and stuff.
Carrots. Yeah. I mean, carrot juice is the highest source of beta carotene that you can consume. So, which is converted to vitamin A. So what happens immediately is a lot of people who are nutrient deficient, you're eating a standard American diet, you're nutrient deficient. And when you start juicing, you start giving your body nutrition that it needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an immediate improvement there, right? Just in the amount of critical vitamins, minerals, enzymes, and antioxidants that you're putting into your body. So there's a benefit immediately from that. But a lot of folks that go on this path, yes, they start juicing, but then they also stop eating junk food,
right? Yeah.
They replace Diet Cokes, right? Soft drinks, energy drinks, whatever, with juice. So they're removing all these fake artificial colors and flavors and sweeteners and even just high fructose corn syrup. So they're removing all these disease promoting foods from their diet and they're replacing them with health promoting foods. So it's sort of like, it's a massive shift, right?
Yeah.
What I said earlier was, just adding green tea to your diet when you're still eating cheeseburgers and pizza and, you know, junk food, sure, there's a benefit, but it's not enough. You got to change your whole life.
Did you experience, do you think, where as you started to really change the food, and you did it immediately, you went out and bought a juicer, Chris, and the whole thing, that it facilitated you to have more clarity, clearer thoughts, to have more connection to God, if you will, just by taking the load off of that digestion and all the yuck stuff?
Everything improved.
Everything.
Yeah. I've had more energy. I felt good. I had more happiness and joy and excitement about life. You know, something happens, I think, too, mentally and emotionally, when you really take the reins of your situation, when you take action, you take control and you take action to help yourself and you start breaking your bad habits. There's just this snowball effect that happens in your, not just in your physical body, but in your sort of with your mental and emotional state. And you realize how food really does affect your mood.
Yeah.
Junk food puts you in a bad mood, an irritable mood, and eating too many animal foods puts you in an aggressive and irritable mood. And when you replace those with whole plant foods from the earth, yeah, you feel better. You think more clearly. You have more energy. It all works in mysterious but positive ways.
Chris, I would suspect, just conjecturing here, that even if you're doing grass-fed meat and you're having some of that, if your digestion and your transit time and your colon's not happy because of the physical, emotional, spiritual stuff, that could be a problem for people and be more, it's fair to say, it could be more cancer-causing in that situation, even the best of meats, because of the putrefaction of a steak rather than a broccoli?
Well, I know what you're getting at,
I'm sorry, I don't know if I asked that well, but...
No, you did.
Okay.
So, stress is such a huge component in cancer that if you don't address that, it can outweigh anything else you're
anything
doing.
Else.
So,
anything.
You can be eating a super healthy fruits and vegetables diet, but if you're full of anger and bitterness and jealousy and resentment and prejudice, mm-hmm. like if you're just full of these and entertaining all of these negative thoughts and emotions day to day in your life, they will make you sick.
Yeah.
They will suppress your immune system, and they will create internal conditions in your body where cancer can thrive. So yeah, you have to address your attitude, your emotions, your thought life, as well as your physical health and, the way you take care of your body.
Right. And I guess I was wanting to kind of get a little bit of clarity on that. How would you do any kind of studies of saying, well, meat could be more cancer causing because of the emotional, spiritual, mental component of it? It's not put in studies, right?
No, so no, it really isn't. That's very hard to quantify. But what we know is that stress suppresses your immune system. So there's some very simple principles that I think we should just kind of stay focused on. Stress suppresses your immune system. Negativity, all negative emotions and thoughts create stress in the body, right? Mm-hmm. So they're detrimental to you. That's why you have to focus on positivity and choosing to think positively. It is a choice to think positively. Sometimes it's easier to default, and we become conditioned to default into negative and critical thinking. And when you catch yourself, what's called mindfulness, right? When you catch yourself and you're thinking about your thoughts, like what am I thinking right now, and why?
Right now,
right?
Right.
When you catch yourself thinking negatively, you have a choice in the moment to say, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm feeling this negative emotion. I'm thinking negatively, but I'm going to make a decision right now to think positively about this situation, even though I don't understand it, right? I'm just going to choose not to think negatively about this person and assume that whatever they did that I'm perceiving as a negative thing, they did for a reason that I don't understand, and maybe they meant the best and they just made a mistake or whatever, right?
Yeah, good for you.
So there's a bit of mental work that you have to do to start to retrain your brain to think positively. So I had to do that. Okay, so I'm getting on a rabbit trail, but that component.
Yeah.
That component, and then the physical health, nutrition and exercise, taking care of yourself component, that have to be addressed together. But with animal protein specifically, there are a lot of studies that demonstrate very clearly that animal protein consumption is linked to most chronic Western diseases. Cancer, heart disease, diabetes, multiple sclerosis. There's a long list of chronic, what are called Western diseases, diseases of affluence, diseases that we have in industrialized nations that are still relatively non-existent in underdeveloped third world countries. And it all comes back to the amount of meat and dairy and processed food that we consume. We know that processed meats are a group one carcinogen. That means bacon, sausage, hot dogs, jerky, processed meats are known carcinogens. They're at the same level of evidence as cigarette smoking, as asbestos, as benzene. So Bacon causes cancer. That's the bottom line. Red meat is a group 2 carcinogen, which means it's a probable cause of cancer based on the available evidence. And when you look around the world at the populations with the lowest rates of cancers, they also eat the least amount of animal foods. So, and none of them are pure vegan, but they just eat very little.
Yeah.
They might eat animal foods a few times a week to a few times a month, right? That's a huge difference between 3 times a day, which is the way we do it in the U.S. So,
okay, let's take a little break here. Good stuff, Chris. His book is called Chris Beat Cancer. You said 14 years you worked on your book? 14 years?
Well, it's been a 14-year journey. That's since great. 2000.
Chris Beat Cancer.
January 2004 to 2018, and I've worked on the book for really the last 8 years.
Cool. And his website is chrisbeatcancer.com. My name is Patrick Timpone. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. OneRadioNetwork.com. Let's do this, and then we'll be back with Chris and wrap it up. Previously with Peter Ragnar, who's a great example of staying young and healthy, we asked him what kinds of things he takes.
Personally, for myself, I look at all of the supplements that help bolster and harmonize my hormones. And, you know, this is both for men and for women. And when you go online, there's so much information about that out there. I heard on one of your advertisements there, Patrick, about the pine pollen. I personally take pine pollen, which I think it's an amazing product. Has an amazing effect upon the body.
Peter, it's one of our favorites too. Pine pollen, any of these are Thrival links. You have the pine pollen pure potency, pine pollen gold, and if you'd like to get it every month, the auto ship is the best price. Also, Stephen Buhner's book, exclusively on pine pollen, is right there on the site too, Daniel's site, right here on OneRadioNetwork.com. I don't know if there's a kinder, gentler food on the planet for the gut than aloe vera. Maybe marshmallow, slippery elm, those kind of guys could fit in the category. But aloe is like the bomb. And we came across Stockton Aloe 1, I guess what has been 6 months ago, with Dr. Michael Haley. And they take this special, well, it's not necessarily special, but it's the one that's known in the world as one of the most healing aloe plants because of the different components and the the different stuff in there. Stockton Aloe 1, and they take the pulp out of the, they just fillet it, and they do this by hand. They take the pulp, they don't use the skin because that's more irritating on the colon. I mean, you could get products with the skin in there, and if you want to poop a lot, it'll do it. But anyway, Stockton Aloe 1 is just the pulp. Then they freeze it. There's no potassium sorbate. There's no pasteurization. It's like the most amazing. And it comes in frozen, and the minimum is 2 1/2 gallons. And I probably have had, I think I'm on my 18th gallon, almost 20 half gallons since we started this product. I just drink it every day now. It's amazing. I don't know. It's hard to imagine. I don't know how long I'm going to be drinking it like I am, but I'm doing probably 4 ounces every day. You can do as much as you want. And I really had, you know, I went through some gut stuff myself over the years, and it kind of, in my consciousness, whenever I would overthink something, it would go right to the gut, and that's why I had some colon stuff and tummy stuff, and this has really, really, really helped. It's an amazing product for the gut in all forms of it. Stockton Aloe 1, the minimum is 2 1/2 gallons, comes in frozen. It'll be about halfway thawed this time of the year when it comes in, styrofoam, and you just pour off what you want in a glass, put it in the fridge, put the rest in the freezer, set some on the counter. I've got some on the counter right now. Come out and pour it into a glass, put the rest, and that's how you do it. And you're just getting the most free, fresh, beautiful product ever. Stockton Aloe 1. Click and order right on the front page. Scroll down there, and they'll give you a free tube of a very nice aloe face cream when you order 2, like I say, minimum 2 1/2 gallons. beautiful product, Stockton Hello One.
SDL Incorporated is offering three free CDs to listeners of the One Radio Network on the definition of money, the history of the Federal Reserve, and protecting your wealth, which describes in brief how investors can utilize American gold and silver coins as a portion of your portfolio to provide some physical assets to compensate for the loss that most people now see in paper money, which is perpetually losing value. Please call us at 1-800-468-2646 for your free copies. Just mention that you heard it on the One Radio Network show. 1-800-468-2646.
Andy's going to be here tomorrow. We give you the gold prices and silver every day. Everything's pretty quiet right now, the old idea. Stock market is up 146. Gold and silver, gold is at 1224, silver 1564. Let's see where the dollar is. Dollar is 94. And we'll talk with Andrew tomorrow. We'll have a good show on the real world of money. As we've talked about forever on this show, and people like Chris tell you and all that, that, you know, everything is, it's all in the gut. I mean, 80% of the, 80%, hello, 80%. It's a real number from very good authorities. 80% of the immune system is in the gut. That's it. And this microbiome is a big deal. And we are so blessed to come across Living Streams Probiotics. Wayne Blakely, who's up there in Moose Country in Montana or Idaho. I don't know, somewhere. I think Idaho. Anyway, he has about 14 different products. He propagates these probiotics in himself, and he knows how to feed them. He knows how to make them have babies and grandkids and great-grandkids. And he's got some of the best strains that he has found around the world to work in various parts of the body. He's also introduced things like Shilajit, Zeolife, the C60, the Sphagnum Moss for different things. For different things that you can use them for. The Living Streams Multi Blend is a standard one with the bifidos and the human DNA that your tummy, my tummy, you're going to really like. Your colon's going to be happier, in my opinion, than it's ever been. Go slow with these guys because they're very powerful. Go slow. They're very, very powerful. I overdid them a little bit here and there, and it's not good. So just go slow with them. Go by the directions. If you go into our store, you're going to find about 14 different products, but I'm going to give you a phone number here. If you'd like to learn more, talk to Marilyn. She'll give you some insights, a lot of stuff that he doesn't want to put on the website because he's had some, you know, let me just say, he has a relationship with the FDA, and they kind of got him on a short leash, and, you know, they're good friends now, but he's real careful about what they say. Here's the phone number, 360-912-2981. That's 360-912-2981. She's with Living Streams. She can give you more insights on some of these products and what they might be used for if you'd like to try them. And also, you can email me, and I'm learning the products pretty well, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. And then do order if you even talk on the phone, but go on the website and order. Otherwise, we won't get a commission on the deal, and that's how we support ourselves and do our house payment, which is cool. So thank you very much for it. And Living Streams Probiotics. We're with Chris Wark, and his website is chrisbeatcancer.com, and his book is called Chris Beat Cancer. Chris, knowing what you know after all this time, I know looking back is kind of dumb. We've all done the best, made the best decisions, but just for fun, if you knew what you know now in 2000, back there when they diagnosed the, would you get the colon cut out?
Yeah, I've been asked this question many times.
Yeah, I bet you and know. I'm curious.
Yeah, the thing about colon cancer is if it's caught early, it is curative with surgery. So if it's stage one or two, surgery can they can take it out, stitch you back up. You're within a month or so, you're recovered and things are good. So I'm not against surgery and I don't regret having surgery. But this is actually sort of a broader question, which is, you know, should you have surgery for cancer? And I think it's a personal answer and it depends. And so if it's easy to remove via surgery, then, you know, and having a tumor in your body makes you very anxious and worried, then I think it's probably better if you go ahead and get it out, right? Get the tumor out and change your whole life in the process and do everything you can do to support your body's ability to repair and regenerate and heal.
And to not make more cancer cells. That's important.
Right.
Right.
And so but there are some risks, right? Anytime you go under the knife, there are definite risks, and there are many risks, right? You can get a staph infection in the hospital that could turn potentially deadly, right? You could risk causing the cancer to spread as a result of surgery because of the body secretes a lot of growth hormones at a surgical site to speed up wound healing because you now have a wound from surgery, and those growth hormones can encourage the growth of cancer cells that are still in the tissues that are left behind. So there's a risk there. So again, there are risks to it, and there are benefits as well because you're debulking. So you are removing millions and millions of cancer cells from your body. But it's just an individual choice. Sure. So having said all that, that's my big disclaimer. Okay. Knowing what I know now, I probably would have given my body a little more time to heal before jumping into surgery. So given myself maybe up to 90 days of radical, hardcore diet and lifestyle change, doing all the things I did and monitoring my progress. And if I saw progress, and we see this all the time, I mean, really 90 days, we're seeing people have dramatic turnarounds in their health after radically changing their diet and lifestyle.
Sure.
Dramatic turnarounds in 90 days. So, you know, tumors are shrinking, blood work's improving, lesions are disappearing, some tumors are disappearing. I mean, the body really does want to heal. And I believe that it's capable of healing if you give it the proper nutrition and care.
Yeah, well said. So, yeah, good. Yeah, we've known people, and I know that you interview a lot of ladies on the breast cancer thing on your website, and we've known people that ladies had lumps, and they just, you know, they said, man, I just got to quit being stressed out and eat better, and they go away. You know, we've had so many people over the years.
So, we're collecting testimonial after testimonial after testimonial. And like you said, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah.
For anyone listening, I've interviewed many, many, many people on the site, on chrisbeatcancer.com, who have healed cancer with nutrition and natural non-toxic therapies. Some of them did no conventional therapy. Some of them did nutrition and natural therapies after conventional therapy failed. And these are just amazing stories of healing and survival. Many of these survivors are 10 and 15 and even 20 and 30 year survivors, long-term survivors, who did basically, you know, almost all the same things I did. And so connecting those common threads is really important because the cancer industry is not studying this. They're not spending any time to put together research studies on people who have healed cancer with nutrition when conventional therapy didn't work, or if they just said no to conventional therapy.
Yes,
because there's no money in nutrition, right? Money's in pharmaceutical drugs. So that's where all the research is focused. How can we develop the next multi-billion dollar blockbuster cancer drug that doesn't cure cancer, but maybe helps people live a little longer than the current drug before they die?
How did your colon function differently? How much did they take out? You say a foot?
A third of my colon.
Third.
Yeah, which is about a foot.
About a foot.
And it didn't affect my quality of life at all.
Really? I'll be darned.
No.
It's amazing, isn't it? The body can deal with that.
Yeah,
it's whoops, there goes a big chunk. Wow.
I know, it's amazing.
Yeah,
it really
amazing.
Is. Yeah, you got 3 feet of colon, so you know, you can live without some of it and be fine.
I'll be darned. Here's an email for you, Chris Wark. A friend has Crohn's disease and avoids all fruits and vegetables, as those seem to exacerbate flare-ups. Yet those are the very foods that helped you. Could you have any suggestions for Crohn's?
Yeah, one of the very first people I met when I adopted a raw food diet in January 2004 was a woman who, and this was sort of a mini miracle in my life at that time, because back then I didn't know anyone on a raw food diet. I mean, 2004, nobody was talking
nobody
about raw foods.
Not too much.
Yeah, it was you know, fringe, to say the least, and definitely fringe in Memphis, which is where I was.
Definitely so, in Memphis, it was fringe.
Yeah.
With all the barbecue there. Wow.
Yeah, beer and barbecue,
beer
man.
Beer and barbecue, that's, man. Memphis.
That's Memphis Fair.
Yeah.
So, but I met a woman. Again, it was just a set, just a, like I said, a mini miracle in my life, because I met this woman who had adopted a raw food diet mm-hmm. and healed her Crohn's disease uh-huh. on a raw food diet. And it was so cool because this was the first person I had even met that was on a raw food diet. It was, I'm like, what, you know about the raw food? You're on a raw food diet? It's like, it was blowing my mind because I just didn't know anyone else that had done it. So the thing about Crohn's is a digestive disease, right? And I talked about this earlier in the interview, but if you want to have the best, healthiest digestive tract possible, then you need to eat a diet that mimics the people who have the least number of digestive diseases. Mm. And that would be the rural Africans. And believe it or not, the rural Africans are not, they don't eat a raw food diet. So that's actually not necessary. But what they do eat is they eat a diet that's very heavy in starchy foods, starchy vegetables. So legumes like lentils, beans, and peas, mm-hmm. Cooked vegetables like collards, right, mm-hmm. And cabbage. They eat potatoes, of course, and grains, and also corn and rice and things like that. So it's a plant-based diet, very little animal food, mm-hmm. because animal food is scarce in the African bush. And they eat a lot of just very simple, humble staple foods. Of course, root vegetables like carrots and beets, mostly cooked.
What do you think the starch component is doing, Chris?
Oh, well, starch is wonderful for your digestive tract, because what happens is when you eat fiber and starch, these are known as prebiotics. And prebiotics are food for good gut bacteria. So good gut bacteria break down and eat this fiber and starch in plant food, and they produce compounds like butyrate. And butyrate is an extremely beneficial compound for your immune system and for your gut health. And so the byproducts, two things are happening at once. One is you're promoting the growth of good bacteria and you're starving bad bacteria, which feeds on animal protein. So you're promoting good bacteria, and that good bacteria is producing compounds that benefit your body. So like you mentioned, the microbiome, 80% of the immune system's in your gut, right? So the healthiest guts in the world that have, the rural Africans don't have Crohn's disease. They don't get it. They don't get colon cancer. They don't get colitis. They don't get hemorrhoids. There's a long list of digestive diseases they don't get. So that really the solution, to a healthy gut is to eat lots of starchy plant food. Very simple. And there was a study recently where they revisited, because this has been known since the 1950s, they revisited the diet of the rural Africans recently to kind of, you know, check up on them. Like, do they still have a rate of colon cancer that's 50 times lower than the U.S.? And the answer to that is yes, 50 times lower rate of colon cancer.
That's amazing. 50,
and
that's a huge number.
Yeah.
That's a huge number.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a huge number because basically they're rate of colon cancer is almost zero. it's so low. So, and what they found was that one of the most significant factors was the absence of animal food was one of the most significant factors in their low rates of colon cancer, because they ruled out a lot of fruits and vegetables have all these wonderful protective benefits, but even the rural Africans that were eating a diet that was considered to be nutrient deficient because they were basically just living on corn grits and little else, still had almost no colon cancer because they weren't eating animal food.
We had an anthropologist on, Chris, that suggested that they were eating some very interesting heritage kind of wild vegetables, leeks and stuff, that actually provided some different probiotics and prebiotics that we just don't get here with broccoli and squash and stuff. It's pretty interesting. He would go down to Africa and he was studying the poop with these guys.
Sure. Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense, right? Eating things in their environment that grow naturally that are helpful, for sure.
Yeah. Chris Wark is here. Wow, it's a great story. Before we go, I'm kind of curious. Over the years, we've heard the term that sugar feeds cancer, right? I mean, you've heard that. So do you think there's any real noodling one has to do with the stomach or colon cancer to stay away from, I don't know, how would you figure out if maybe the carrots or the more sugary beets or something like that could be feeding a cancer cell?
Well, sugar feeds cancer is an overly simplified idea.
Yeah, it must be.
Here's what we know. We're not getting cancer from eating too much carrots and beets.
Yeah, that's not true. Getting, that's true.
Right?
Right.
We're not getting
right.
cancer from eating too much fruit. That's not our problem in the U.S.
Right.
And it's not the problem of any country with high rates of cancer. They're not eating too much. It's not that they're eating too much fruit, carrots, or beets, or carrot or beet juice. The problem is they're eating too much meat and dairy and too much processed food and too much refined sugar and corn syrup. Okay? So those foods are unhealthy and disease-promoting. But I don't think anyone should worry about the sugar content in any fruit or in carrot juice or beets. Because here's the thing. Yes, there's sugar in there, but every cell in your body runs on sugar. Sugar's
right.
good.
Yeah.
Your body needs sugar. Your cells use it for fuel. It's clean burning fuel. And but pure sugar, right? Let's just say white sugar is clean burning fuel, but it doesn't give your body anything else. Right? It gives it energy and that's all. But let's just compare that to carrot juice. Carrot juice has sugars in it, of course, but it gives you a huge dose of beta carotene, vitamin A, antioxidants, enzymes, vitamins, and minerals. So it gives you all these other amazing compounds that nourish your cells and feed your body, right? Support your body's ability to heal. So fruit is a perfect food. It's easy to digest. It gives you sugar for energy, and it gives you all these wonderful nutrients, antioxidants, enzymes, anti-cancer compounds as well. So I'm constantly encouraging people, don't be afraid of sugar. Don't be afraid of fruit. Yes, cut out the processed food, the junk food, the refined foods, you know, but eat as much fruits and vegetables and fresh carrot and beet juices and things like that as you want. It's only going to help you.
On the cooked and raw thing, and we'll end with this one, I think it's an interesting question. Do you think, in your opinion, that there's really a step-up level of protection or health if you would go totally raw as opposed to eating some cooked vegetables, stuff like that, rice, legumes, lentils, and stuff that you can't eat raw? Mm-hmm. Just your opinion. I mean, I'm sure there's...
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So... the raw food diet is a very powerful healing and detoxification diet in the short term, but it's not a good long-term diet. So I wouldn't encourage anyone to be a raw foodist and to, you know, I'm going to eat a raw food diet for the rest of my life. Like that doesn't make sense. But in the short term, if you have a serious health condition that you're trying to heal, I think it's the absolute best first place to start is to go all raw. And, you know, for 90 days, maybe up to a few years. Okay. Some people who have a lot of weight to lose will find that they lose weight easily on a raw food diet. Okay. For others that don't need to lose weight, or maybe you're struggling to maintain a healthy weight, they need more cooked food.
Yeah.
And so there's a balance of raw and cooked. And the thing is, if you're eating tons of fruits and vegetables, raw and cooked, you're doing it right. That's the most important thing. Just eat tons of fruits and vegetables, a minimum of 10 servings a day. What I did was really closer to between 15 and 20 servings of fruits and vegetables every single day.
Wow.
When you're piling in that much nutrition, good things happen in the body when you're doing that. So the nice thing is you don't have to be, there's a lot of room for individualization when it comes to what a person should eat. But the principles of eating very little to no meat and dairy are solid. The principles of not eating junk food and processed food are solid. And then eating a variety of raw and cooked vegetables. So legumes are wonderful. You can eat them sprouted or you can eat them cooked, right? grains need to be either sprouted or cooked. Can't really do raw grains. It doesn't, you know, they just don't digest well raw. And like tomatoes, healthier cooked than raw, because cooking tomatoes makes the lycopene somewhere around 8 times more absorbable by the body. So there are some people that have the idea that raw food is always healthier, and that's not the case, because even though you might lose a little bit of nutrition, some water-soluble vitamins and minerals in the cooking process, maybe 15%, it's not a whole lot, you also increase the absorption of other nutrients in food by cooking. So again, it kind of depends on the food, but a general rule of thumb is with cruciferous vegetables and allium vegetables. So with the broccoli, cauliflower, kale, cabbage type vegetables, and garlic, onions, and leeks, they are more potent raw. The anti-cancer compounds are more potent raw. But with other vegetables like starchy vegetables, potatoes, rice, beans, corn, grains, legumes, and even, like I said, tomatoes, they're better, a little bit better, in some cases a lot better, cooked. Okay. And then of course fruit, you know, Everybody eats fruit raw pretty much, so that's easy.
You have a lot of great stories on your website, all these different people, everything from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, breast cancer, myeloma, breast cancer, a lot of breast cancer stories. I keep saying this is the final question, but you're interesting to talk to. What are some of the biggest, before you go, what are some of the biggest common denominators with all these people you've been interviewing? Just what are the top that come to mind, the things that they did or changed in their life?
Yep, absolutely. And I'm going to plug my book again, because I cover this in great detail in my book. I cover the common denominators. But briefly, one is the plant-based diet.
Hmm.
So stopping the animal food and the processed food and converting to a diet that's near 100% plant-based and mostly raw for a season. Almost everyone I know started juicing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because juicing gives you more nutrition. Juicing is like medical food, right? Yeah. It's a way to get more nutrition into your body in addition to the 3 healthy meals you're eating per day. So it's in between meals. Everyone I know changed their entire life, right? Pretty much all of them made a radical life transformation. They started exercising. They started to forgive people that had hurt them in the past. They let go of negativity and they embraced joy and happiness and positivity. So it's all these things we've been talking about in the interview that they looked at their whole life just like I did and said, the way I'm living is killing me. So I need to change my life. And then they proceeded to get busy doing it.
Well, good. That's well said. The way I'm living is killing me. That's pretty interesting. Well, brother, you're doing good. Congratulations on your work. And
Thank you.
You have 2 kids, right? 2 kids.
2 girls, 10 and 13.
Attaboy. Crispy Cancer, his website, his book is called Crispy Cancer, and a chemo-free survivor's health blog. All right, sir. Take care of yourself. I appreciate you being here. Sorry about the mix-up at the beginning of the show.
No harm done. Thank you, Patrick. It's been fun.
Yeah, been an honor. Thank you. All right, here's a good one. Chris Wark, good website. If you know anybody with the big C going on in their life, boy, this would be a great book to give them as a gift. That'd be a little miracle thing that comes right in their life. All right, kids, I love you all very much. Thank you for your ongoing support. It's only going to be 95 here today, so cool wave is coming in. We'll see you tomorrow with Andrew Goss, The Real World of Money. I love you all very much. Thanks.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.